A legacy gift to Doctors Without Borders makes a lasting impact, advancing our mission and ensuring the ability to provide medical care when and where it's needed most. To learn more about making a gift in your will or living trust, visit doctorswithoutborders.org/WSJ.
This is your tech news briefing for Monday, December 20th. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. When the internet was created, many of its early developers and users thought it would be distributed, user-controlled, and democratic. But our tech columnist Christopher Mims says the web has moved far from that goal. What with the growth of big tech, their massive profits, misinformation campaigns, and a host of other issues. Now some starry-eyed tech dreamers are planning a new kind of online experience, Web 3.0. On today's show, we'll discuss how this group, which includes many of the tech world's most powerful, plans to upend the internet. That's after these headlines. Jurors have started deliberating in the criminal fraud trial of Elizabeth Holmes. The founder of the defunct blood testing startup Theranos is accused of lying to investors and patients about her technology's abilities. During the trial, prosecutors tried to portray Holmes as intentionally scheming to raise her own profile. The defense tried to paint her as a young and naive founder who made innocent mistakes. Holmes even took the stand in her own defense. In total, the jury heard from 32 witnesses over 3 months. They're expected to deliberate for at least several days. A growing number of people are investing in cryptocurrency, but many individual investors face an information void. To fill that, they're turning to groups on Reddit, TikTok, and Telegram to learn about digital currencies. Lamar Wilson co-founded the Black Bitcoin Billionaires Group. He says learning about cryptocurrencies is especially important for Black investors who've traditionally been marginalized.
The idea for us is to basically focus more on the self-sovereignty and the generational wealth aspects of Bitcoin. The fact that Bitcoin is this asset that cannot be confiscated once you own it yourself is extremely powerful for the Black community, because in this country, when we've been able to build wealth, many times that wealth has either been burned down, taken from us, confiscated, so on and so forth. And so with Bitcoin being an asset that you cannot confiscate once you own your own keys, no one else can confiscate, it makes it extremely powerful. And so we try to focus on that part of Bitcoin as an alternative to a financial system that hasn't always worked in our favor.
To hear more from Wilson, check out our sister podcast, Your Money Briefing. And do you ever think about what'll happen to the information on your phone after you die? Well, as part of a new iOS software update, Apple has released a tool that lets you specify who you want to let access your iCloud data after you die. Things like notes, photos, and mail. But our senior personal tech columnist Joanna Stern says Apple is kind of late to the game. Google and Meta already have these settings.
The reason they've had this is because it's a really messy situation when somebody dies and you want to get into their computer or you want to get access to their phones, whether that be a PDF that's really important for tax reasons or the estate that you're inheriting and you've got to get information, or just getting things like photos and videos and other things to remember this person. And so that can be really messy. I mean, maybe you have the password of that person, but then you don't have the password to another account. And there's lots of layers of this. And the tech companies nicely have come around in the last couple of years to say, we want to help with this. We want to help people with this messy process.
You can find Joanna's guide on how to set up the legacy feature on our website, WSJ.com. All right, coming up, what does the next iteration of the internet look like? And who are the people who will get to decide that? We'll discuss after the break.
A legacy gift to Doctors Without Borders makes a lasting impact, advancing our mission and ensuring the ability to provide medical care when and where it's needed most. To learn more about making a gift in your will or living trust, visit doctorswithoutborders.org/WSJ.
In the beginning, there was Web 1.0, a series of static personal and business sites that users could look at and read, but not really interact with. Then came Web 2.0, characterized by social media, e-commerce, and the collection and sale of our personal data. This is the web we have now, dominated by big tech companies, regulated by governments. But are we on the cusp of a new dawn for the internet, Web 3.0? A group of entrepreneurs, investors, and tech dreamers think so. Joining us to discuss what they envision and how they're trying to make it a reality is WSJ tech columnist Christopher Mims. Hey, Christopher. Thanks for being here.
Hey, Zoe. Happy as always to be here.
So in the simplest terms, can you tell us what Web 3.0 is?
Web 3.0 is an attempt to replace the internet with something that is more democratic and decentralized. Basically, it's a way to use the blockchain to give distributed control and hopefully ownership to everyone who is using a service, whether it's a financial service or social media or anything.
Okay, can you give us an example of that? Like, what might it look like?
So already we've seen some early and quite spectacularly failed examples of what Web 3.0 is supposed to look like. So there was a Constitution DAO, which means Constitution Distributed Autonomous Organization, which basically used a blockchain on which they issued a token that people could buy. And when you bought it, it funded this crowdfunding effort to buy a copy of the United States Constitution. And it looked early on like they were going to successfully buy the Constitution, but then some private equity person came in and, you know, beat them at the auction. And then it just became this whole disaster because it became very complicated to try to refund everyone's money. So far, Web3 is a lot of failed experiments, but it's also in some corners things like NFTs, which is a way for people to buy and sell digital art.
Tell us, who are the folks who are pushing this idea, who are trying to make Web 3.0 either a reality or maybe they just believe in it? Who's backing this?
Well, famously, Jack Dorsey, who really is one of the primary architects of Web 2.0 in terms of Twitter and then, you know, Square, the payments company now called Block. He renamed that company to Block in part because he's so all in on Bitcoin and crypto and blockchain. And even with him leaving Twitter to sort of pursue his crypto dreams, you know, Twitter has told me that, you know, they're also pursuing blockchain. It's going to be important to their future and they're going to try to build a more distributed model of something, some future social network that anybody can access that, you know, maybe the sort of stuff under the hood that makes it so democratically controlled is the blockchain.
Crypto seems like the buzzword for Web 3.0. How are platforms trying to use, is it cryptocurrency or the blockchain to build these visions?
So the key to understanding this is that at the heart of Web 3.0, people are creating cryptocurrencies, which are little pieces of software, essentially, which can do anything. So you can create a blockchain and it can do the following. It can be a distributed, you know, database of all of these cryptocurrency exchanges, but also the tokens on that blockchain can be used to store data, or they can be smart contracts, which give you certain rights, voting rights, let's say, in the comportment of a company, or they can be, you know, exchanging other real world goods like art or mortgages. So once money has been made into software, that is, money's been made into code, you can sort of do whole new classes of things with money that just weren't possible before. And one way that people describe Web 3.0 is it's the financialization of everything. So if I wanted to issue a token called Christopher Token, which gave you rights to a percentage of my future earnings because I wanted to use that to, let's say, fund my own college education, I could do that.
Why would you want to, you know, financialize every aspect of our lives or certainly our lives online?
Well, I mean, maybe you're sort of ideologically committed to the Austrian School of Economics and you think that we should create a bunch of deflationary assets and that everything should be money. That's the best way to organize our world. There's definitely a lot of ideology in this, you know, but also kind of being more charitable to some of these folks, it's also about control. So let's say you're a creator, you're an artist, or you make videos on YouTube or whatever, and you know, you don't want to be reliant on advertising and advertisers, or you don't want to be reliant on a central distributor of your content who can, you know, deplatform you if they don't like the kind of speech that you're putting out there. Part of this is about, well, what if we can create these distributed services, these distributed organizations, where, you know, no one organization has control. In some ways, it's an attempt to return the internet to its kind of halcyon utopian days of, you know, pre-first internet bubble, when everybody thought, oh, you know, information wants to be free and everyone will just be able to pay each other for whatever they want and there won't be any, you know, central gatekeepers. And of course, the way that turned out is we ended up with nothing but giant corporations as central gatekeepers.
What I don't understand is, wouldn't you end up with a hierarchy here too? I mean, some of these, you know, digital coins could end up being worth a lot, certainly a lot more than others. And so the people who control those will have a leg up. And certainly the people who have a leg up early are going to have more power later on.
Yeah, I think that that is the best and the most central question to ask about these is, you know, who benefits? And I think you're absolutely right. I think that there is a substantial amount of naivete in this community when it espouses, you know, that this is all about democratization of money or speech or anything else. As frequently happens with new technologies, they just kind of reproduce the old power structures in a new way, but maybe with different people in charge. So I think that the, maybe you might call it the behavioral economic or the sociological side of this whole movement is much less well developed than the code and the engineering side. It's a bunch of folks who are like, yeah, if everybody owns a piece of this company, you know, it will suddenly be this utopian vision that we have. And it's like, well, we kind of have that now. And it's called the stock market. And yes, in theory, you own a piece of that company, but that doesn't mean you're in charge of it.
All right. That was our WSJ tech columnist, Christopher Mims. Thanks so much for joining us, Christopher.
Thank you for having me, Zoe.
And that's it for today's Tech News Briefing. If you want more tech stories, check out our website, WSJ.com. And if you like our show, please rate and review it. You can do that wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.